Welcome back into Sports Night, talking all things NBA. And now here to talk about the NBA is Bleacher Report's Jared Swerling. Now, Jared, starting off with the New York Knicks, it's certainly been a disastrous season for the New York Knickerbockers. But overall, what's been the biggest reason for the Knicks' struggles to this point in the season?
Well, I think it's a flawed roster, to be honest with you. I think that they have too many offensive-minded players. And you go down their roster, it's just it's not a very even floor balance. And I think Woodson has dealt with injuries, no question. I think that I think at times the offensive stalls, and that's obviously through Melo and the isolation that they run and things like that. It's not a very consistent offense, but I do believe that the core of it is the roster. I think that Woodson has tried for the last 2 years, and he did a good job last year, but for the most part, you know, they won last year really with three-point shooting and offense. You know, they led the league in three-point shots made. This year they've been a little off, obviously, but I think that they're going to have to really reevaluate things. It's going to be very difficult this year to do that. So the key for them is 2015. Next summer, when they'll have about over $40 million, $45 million in cap space available to do that. So I think that's really the unfortunate situation with the Knicks right now. And I think that Woodson, no matter what happens with him, if he gets fired or not, I think that it's beyond him. I think it's a roster situation.
Now, Jared, sticking in New York, the Brooklyn Nets have certainly turned around since the change of the calendar year to 2014. How much credit does Coach Jason Kidd deserve for the Nets' turnaround?
I think a good amount, and I go back to when he started Paul Pierce and KG in that front line. I think that really helped them establish a good defensive presence, having those two guys, obviously, from their Celtics days together. So I think that was a good adjustment, even starting Sean Livingston, moving him to starting point guard, and at times even bringing in Deron Williams to back up with him in the backcourt and starting lineup. So I think he made some nice roster rotations that were key. So I think you have to credit him. But I think looking ahead, though, he has to really think about the shortening of the rotation. I think that I had a great conversation with Steve Clifford down in Charlotte last. He said, you know, a great thing in the NBA is that while you have good roster depth, you have to figure out a way to really shorten the rotation, to heavy up the minutes on your guys that really need to be there down the stretch in the second half of the season. So it's interesting to see how Jason Kidd really manages that. They do have an older team, so that's a concern for him, so he does have to balance that out. But the one thing with the Nets is that they are bringing in guys that sometimes play 10, 12 minutes a game and things like that, and it's hard to really build a foundation. Look at the Pacers, for example. You know, they have a whole deep team, but Frank Vogel only plays 8, 9 guys, and they maximize their potential that way. So you need roster depth for the playoffs in case injuries happen, but I think Kidd has to figure out the management of that team. But I like what he has done, some of the roster rotations in the starting lineup. I think defensively he set a good tempo with that team. Offensively, it's still pretty much a freelance basketball team. You watch how they play. There's not a lot of play call sets. It's isolation through Joe Johnson and things like that. So, but at the end of the day, it's going to be their players. They have guys who have been there. AG Pierce, like I said, Deron Williams has been deep into the playoffs. So they have the veteran. It's going to take that veteran team to really make a push. So I credit Kidd, but also it's going to come down to their personnel.
Talking NBA with Bleacher Report's Jared Swerling here on Sports Night. Now, Jared, you mentioned the Indiana Pacers. There's no doubt about it. The Eastern Conference really has been abysmal this season, aside from the Pacers and the Miami Heat. But in all honesty, can you see any other team possibly challenging those two teams, maybe getting to the Eastern Conference Finals?
Absolutely not. I can't see either team. I think they can beat those two guys. I mean, you look at their consistency and their depth and things like that. I think the East is still really in flux right now. A lot of adjustments. And, the Pacers and Heat have been there the last couple of years, so they have the experience and they've upgraded. So the Heat are still the Heat. I was at the game against the Warriors the other night. Although they let a 21-point lead kind of take hold with the Warriors, they're still the best half-court defensive team in the league, I think, with their rotations and their half-court traps and how they just get after in the perimeter. I think their depth in the interior is obviously a concern against the Pacers. That will be the biggest question, how they defend that. But those two teams have been gearing up for this for a while now. It's going to happen again. I think the Heat will come out of the East. I really do. I think that they still have that foundation. For the most part, they're pretty healthy. Wade is, being safe for the playoffs, basically. I think he's going to be ready to go at that time. And, I think it's going to be the Heat and the Thunder. And I think the Thunder could probably beat the Heat. I think that with Westbrook coming back, that'll be a huge advantage for the Thunder to really establish their half-court attack and transition attack. So I'm going to say Thunder and Heat over the Heat in the finals.
Now, Jared, you mentioned the Oklahoma City Thunder, and the main guy on that team, Kevin Durant, has simply been sensational this season. Is it a foregone conclusion at this point, at the midpoint of the NBA season, that Kevin Durant will overtake LeBron James for NBA MVP?
I think it's still a little too soon. You know, LeBron put together some unbelievable performances before the All-Star break, including that crazy game in Golden State with a game-winning shot. So it is still, you know, over 30 games to play, so I still, there's still plenty of time. You know, with LeBron, too, one thing that's overlooked with him is that, you know, Wade has missed a good amount of games this year, and LeBron has helped to keep the Heat still in it. So that's something that has to be looked at. I think even with Russ Westbrook out for the Thunder and Durant stepping up his play, you know, you can say the same thing almost for LeBron without Wade a lot of games, you know, having to anchor his team down the stretch and things like that. So that's still going to be a very tight race. I think right now Kevin Durant has the lead, no question, just because of how he's evolved, not just scoring the basketball, but making plays as a passer. I talked to a couple of scouts about his evolution as a playmaking, pick-and-roll guy, you know, really finding great cutters and keeping his eyes and ears open on the court a lot better, not just scoring for himself. So his evolution as a playmaking point forward has been huge. So, and his PER is obviously better than LeBron's, and I think his efficiency has been really noticeable with his shooting percentage and things like that. But you look at LeBron, he's still up there, and, you know, in the paint, he's shooting like 79% or something like that. He's still around 54% from the field. So his numbers are still fantastic. So I think it's going to come down to the wire, depending on how the team's finished out. So I think Westbrook coming back will be very interesting for Durant. I don't know what Westbrook's timetable is. So, you know, that could maybe diminish some of Durant's value a bit, you know, having him back on the offensive attack there. But I think it's going to be a very close MVP race. But those two guys are clearly the favorites, I think.
Pleased to be joined by Bleacher Report's Jared Swirling here on Sports Night. Now, Jared, a big issue in the NBA this season has been the talk of tanking, of course, with the loaded draft class coming up this June.
Yeah.
You have teams like the Philadelphia 76ers this past week lose back-to-back games by more than 40 points. Of course, the Chicago Bulls, their front office actions trading away Luol Deng, but Tom Thibodeau speaking about not tanking away the season. How controversial of an issue has tanking been, especially this season in the NBA, with such a tremendously talented draft class coming up this year?
You know, my take on this whole thing is that every single year you have five teams who are geared for a championship run. You know, this year it's the Thunder, the Heat, the Pacers, the Spurs, and I guess maybe the Clippers or the Rockets, right? So every year there's like five favorites. The rest of the teams are sort of, what should we do? I mean, I think that, you know, you look for the potential fourth seed, so you have the home court advantage in the first round, potentially the second round. You know, with this tanking thing, it's always been, even though it's a hotter topic now with this draft class, that's exactly why I think it's been a hotter topic with this draft class with Wiggins and Parker and things like that. But when you really look at it, that's the week every single year. And I think that it is a tricky balance because GMs are, you know, thinking about the future of their franchise, and especially now with the new CBA and the luxury tax that you have to build through the draft. That's really the new way of doing it. But at the same time, you have players who are going out there and trying to compete every night to make them competitive, like the Phoenix Suns, for example, the Charlotte Bobcats, even the Wizards are rising to meet some people. I had a great conversation with Raj Higgins, the president of basketball ops for the Charlotte Bobcats, a couple weeks ago when I was down in Charlotte. And he told me, you know, we have an agenda here as a management team to look ahead to the draft and always look ahead. We have to figure out how we're going to build our team. But at the same time, I can't tell our players to not go out and not be competitive. He said, we've made a very competitive push this year. If we make the playoffs, you know, we're not going to make any trades just to potentially get a higher draft. You know, and I think that's what you've seen this year. I think that you haven't seen a lot of trades and things like that. And I think that's because of the reason that they think that their teams are competitive. They're trying to win games. And wherever they end up, it is a crapshoot. You know, this is the kind of draft too where you can get a good player at 15, 20. It's a very deep draft. Like T.J. Harrison, for example, who's a star in the D League. You know, he can go 15 or 20 in the draft, and he's a stud. He's a hell of a scorer. You know, I think his off the court issues have been somewhat problematic, but it's a deep draft class, and I think that, you know, you look at the last couple of years, there's been some great steals in the NBA draft. So it's a great question. I'm not going to lie. I just think it's a very tricky balance because of how every year it's the same situation. And also you have the pressure from ownership as well, saying, look, you know, we don't want fans not coming to our games and just, you know, acting like we're just giving up players. So So there's also the ownership factor, too. You know, we want to put out a good product. And the Phoenix Suns are playing well. That's great. It's great for the short term. It's good for the fans. And it's good for our business in the short term. So it's going to be always an every year question. I just don't know. I don't think there's an answer to it unless a team really goes out and just basically trades away half the roster. And we haven't seen that this year. So I think teams are trying to compete, and hopefully they end up in a good spot.
All right, Jared, we'll get you out of here on this. And there's no doubt there's been a lot of changes in the NBA, mainly by the face of the NBA commissioner, David Stern, outgoing. Yeah. And now you have a new commissioner, Adam Silver. What changes, if any, do you expect to see from new commissioner Adam Silver moving forward in the landscape of the NBA?
Well, I don't see any major changes. I think one thing you'll continue to see is the evolution of the international game. They had a great, great global games last preseason, going to different countries and things like that. So you'll continue to see that. I did a piece, one of my colleagues, Howard Beckett, Ethan Skolnick, and Kevin Ding, on we talked to people around the league to see what changes they like to see from Adam Silver. And I had a great conversation with Jeff Van Gundy, Rod Higgins, Clyde Drexler, and Joe Abunasar, who's a trainer for a lot of NBA players. And the one consistent thing that I heard from them was that they like to see if the back-to-back games could be resolved a bit, if that could be reduced a bit, maybe shortening of the season, things like that. Because, you know, and I do believe in this, sometimes when you watch games, not really competitive until the third, fourth quarter. Sometimes you see these blowout games and things like that. So if there's some way to maybe let these players get a little bit more rest, I know that they're high-level professional athletes and they're at the top of their game, but I just think that maybe to alleviate, these guys are playing also all year round. You know, summer tournaments and the Olympics, and, you know, it's just a nonstop. It's different than it was 15 years ago. So maybe there's some way that they can just maybe reduce some of the back-to-back games. This year alone, the Bobcats has a lead high 24 back-to-back games. And Higgins admitted to me when I saw him in Charlotte, he's like, Jared, it's just killing our team. You know, I see guys coming from a back-to-back and just look tired, and it's just challenging. So maybe something like that. But I think overall, the league, I don't see major changes, maybe a rule here and there. But I see the game even growing bigger and bigger. I'm not saying it's going to take over soccer as the world's biggest sport, but it will continue its dominance, I think, as the world loves the game of basketball.
That is Bleacher Report's Jared Zwirling giving us a couple of minutes. Jared, thanks a lot for the time. We really appreciate it.
Hey, anytime, man.